Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Traveling the Jefferson Highway show. This is a show we do every fourth Thursday. And, you know, Nancy and I publish Big Blend magazines, do regular Big Blend radio shows, and then also travel full time across the country on our Love Your Parks tour. And one thing we kind of got our foot into is the Jefferson Highway. This is a very historic highway that started in 1915. And you got to think about this because Route 66 is almost ready to celebrate its 100-year anniversary, which is very exciting. But you've got to think about how it's what it's like to keep these highways alive through wars, through life changing, the world getting modernized. And that's exactly what this Jefferson Highway is like. It runs from Winnipeg, Canada, all the way down to New Orleans. You can call it the Pines to Palms Highway or the Palms to Pines Highway, whichever way you want to take it or ride it. And it was started in 1915 by the editor of Better Homes and Gardens. And it's very exciting. This June coming up is the conference for the Jefferson Highway Association, the annual conference. They have a sociability caravan going on, a lot happening in Iowa. But today's show, and Nancy and I are starting to travel this, and we are actually in Oklahoma right now, and we like it here. We really do. It's beautiful. So we're going to be doing as much, we've done a little bit of Iowa and a little bit of Kansas, done a little bit of Missouri, we've done a little bit of Texas. Sometimes we just didn't know what we were on, like we didn't know about the highway. We've done some in Louisiana, like Natchitoches, Louisiana. We cover that area a lot, and that's on the highway. But we're going to be doing some traveling, so follow us on social media. We're going to go up from Oklahoma up to Iowa soon. But today's show is about military history on the highway. We've done haunted history. We've done women's history, women outlaw history. We've done African-American history. And today, again, military history is the topic. And so I encourage you to go to this one website, jeffersonhighway.org. That is the website for the association. They have an amazing Facebook group to join as well. But as always, we have the Jefferson Highway president, Roger Bell, on the show, and he's being run around ragged a little bit, but I know he's excited because of the conference and the sociability caravan that's coming up. But welcome back, Roger. How are you?
It's great to be back, Lisa. Thank you.
Yay. Are you excited? I mean, this I've heard that this conference is going to be like one of the biggest, you know,
yeah,
with what's happening.
It's our largest registration conference we've had. We've broken over 70. We've filled up the historic Park Inn in Mason City, which was designed by the famous architect Frank Lloyd Wright. We've completely filled up the hotel. So that's kind of unique when you go to a conference and everybody staying in the hotel is in your conference. So that's pretty cool. So we have that, and we've actually have some extra space because of it's we're filled up at another hotel, but we have everything seems to be going pretty well there, and we have a good conference team. A lot of my efforts been on the caravan, which we featured in last month's episode, and I'm just really enthused by all the communities in Iowa that are embracing us, learning more about us, getting involved in this caravan, and it's already been a success because of that. I mean, no matter what we do in the caravan, it's already been a success because of a lot of the contacts and friends we've made over the last few months.
It's very exciting to hear all of this, and you know, there's just so much to experience on the highway, and I think every time you do one thing, it leads to a gazillion others, and I think that's what's going to happen from this conference and the sociability caravan, because once you get on this, it is you get absolutely addicted. Nancy and I just met up with our real good friends from Holland in Nashville the other day. It was like we haven't seen them. How many years? 7 years, Nancy? And they document neon signs. all over the country because they're we have an epidemic of them going away because they're very expensive to have. These historic neon signs that you would often see on Route 66 and small motels, and you know, in they're very interested in the Jefferson Highway, and we got into that discussion. And it's like, he's like, well, we've done this now. We might have to, you know, it's like kind of once you get the bug, I think you get the bug. And we were just talking about the amazing job the association has done in the communities of signage and people going out and painting what was the old bridge. And now we have the road, but like this was the old bridge. And to see all these communities come together, it's a very, very special, special time. So we're addicted to it now. Roger, it's your fault. You and Arlene from Natchitoches. It's, you guys got us stuck in this. And so let's bring our guests on today. We have Adam Lynn, who is the director of Honey Springs Battlefield and Visitor Center in Shakota, Oklahoma. I'll get there. What's pronouncing everything here in Oklahoma. And I encourage you to go to the website. It's okhistory.org. That's a good name. I like that because, hey, listen, history rocks. And then /sites/Honey Springs. You can find them. Just type in Honey Springs, Oklahoma, and you'll find it. And also on Facebook. So welcome, Adam. How are you?
Doing great. Appreciate you guys having me tonight.
Hey, this is cool. So you guys, are you on the highway itself or like a little detour?
We're a little detour, but we're basically on the highway. You know, during the conflict that took place here at Battle of Honey Springs, it was known as the Texas Road, and that would later merge into what would become the Jefferson Highway.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. And so this was like a big battlefield, and really was this mostly, it was like Indian territory at the time, right?
But exactly. It was Indian territory, and there's several things that stand out historically. I always tell people, but this was the largest Civil War conflict to take place in what is now Oklahoma, then Indian territory. There were a total of 9,000 troops that fought here, and they were fighting over control of the Texas Road. So, it's also thought to be one of the most culturally diverse conflicts to take place in the entire Civil War. So, yeah, there were 10 different tribal nations that fought here, and then there was an African-American regiment that fought in the middle of the Union lines for the Union.
Wow. And at that time, were they Buffalo Soldiers or no?
Not, they weren't called Buffalo Soldiers to my knowledge at that time. But, they had extra incentive to fight, knowing that they would be given no quarter should they be fought, you know, caught on the battlefield, you know. And,
I know we're going to go to Texas next, but I want you to just, before we go, get Susan on the line here. The Texas Road, when you say that, we're all looking at dirt roads, and this was not the truth. Didn't look like that. Can you tell everybody what the Texas Road is?
Sure. Yeah, the Texas Road, as it pertains to the conflict here, was a major military road by the time the Civil War broke out. But it started in the late 1700s as the Osage Trace, or at least a portion of it did. And then, you know, by the time settlers were settling Texas, it was known as the Texas Road, and it was also the precursor to the Chisholm Trail, which was known as the Shawnee Trail. So longhorn cattle would have been driven up from Texas through this road before the Civil War.
Adam, you can. I've been there. You can actually see portions of the remainder of the road and different parts.
You certainly can. On Trail 3 of the battlefield, we have 5 walking trails and over 50 interpretive signs. But on Trail 3 of the battlefield, you can see the original remnants of the road. And the width of the road would have varied based on the time of the year. It's not a road that we think of today. But the general location of the road, you know, was in this area. Absolutely.
Wow. So is this now, is it part of the National Historic Trail?
It is. It's part of the Oklahoma Historical Society, but we are a national landmark. Yes.
Okay. Wow. Okay. And so you're saying Osage, and it's not Osage, like I've been saying.
Osage.
No. Yes. Osage.
I know. Listen, half of these radio shows that we do are all about Lisa learning language. Okay. How to pronounce things. But hey, you don't know until you get there.
That's right.
How you get it. So this is fascinating. So that trail, when you talk about cattle, we've been down to Bandera, Texas, and that was mm-hmm. Serious cowboy town. We saw truckloads of cowboys, literally, and I smiled. Like I was happy about it. Well, they were cute.
One of the things about the Texas road, Lisa, too, is, you know, the whole theory of this is interesting because the Texas road was very early, obviously. And then when the railroads came through, they used a lot of the Katy Railroad in Oklahoma, used a lot of it. So it was close by what the original Texas road. And then later on, the Jefferson Highway was most of it in Oklahoma is very close to the Katy. So all three of these are really close to each other.
Absolutely.
So it's really so you're going back almost hundreds of generations when you're traveling the Jefferson Highway route here, by the Katy, the railroads that came through there. So you think of all the people that traveled on this route in different time periods. It's quite fascinating.
Wow. I want to bring Susan on the show. Susan Lanning is from the Audie Murphy and American Cotton Museum. So you can go to cottonmuseum.com. She's in Greenville, Texas, and she can kind of give us an idea where Greenville is on the map as well. But this is really fascinating because it looks at the cotton industry and also some really incredible, from what I'm going on their website, military exhibits to really look at the military heroes of their region. And I believe that Audie is probably quite a hero. So welcome to the show, Susan. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great.
Ah, this is fantastic. Yeah. Now, am I saying, is it Audie or Audie? See, now I'm going to get in Audie. Trouble again.
Yeah, it's Audie. Audie.
Oh, I did something right. Good. That's excellent. So Greenville, Texas, when you think about the Jefferson Highway, where are you based out of? Like, if people think about Dallas or just even like East Texas, where would you say would be the biggest area for people to understand where you are?
Yeah, we're about 40 minutes east of Dallas.
Oh, so actually pretty close.
Yeah, right on I-30.
I know we've been there. Yeah, we're coming back because we need to come see you for sure and look at the museum. So can you give us a little bit about, because was the museum pretty much started because of Audie?
Actually, no, we really started as kind of like a county museum covering the whole history of the county. And then we've been around since 1987. And so it's kind of gone through phases and changed over the years. We moved over into cotton, started doing the cotton exhibits, and we're called the American Cotton Museum for a long time. And then we started receiving some artifacts from Audie Murphy's family in the early 2000s. And so then that really changed a lot of what we did. So that's how we became the Audie Murphy American Cotton Museum in 2002.
Oh.
And okay. So we've kind of, in a way, gone full circle. Yeah, so we still cover the whole history of the county. And so the museum is kind of divided into three sections. In the front section, you've got our history, our early history of how Hunt County got started and the people and the places and the businesses and all of that. Then it segues into the cotton history and talk about, because Hunt County was really primarily known for a couple of main things. Cotton production was a big one once the first train came through in 1881. And up until like the late 40s, and then that all changed. And then, of course, Audie Murphy, military. Audie Murphy, for those that don't know, he was the most decorated combat soldier of World War II, and he was born in Kingston, about 10 minutes north of Greenville.
Most decorated soldier of World War II. Like, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And possible. I'm on your website. Every medal possible, including the Medal of Honor. And this was all before he was 21 years old?
Yes, he was young. He enlisted when he was only 17. He fudged a bit on his birth certificate to get in because he wasn't 18.
Oh, wow.
Like a lot of people back then, you know, he was born at home, so didn't even have a birth certificate. And so his sister he talked his sister into getting one for him so that he could enlist, and they fudged a bit on the date.
I've heard some stories like that, you know, where people fudged and went for it. And do you think he did it because, hey, he wanted to get out of town, or he just really wanted to go and get in there and get in the good fight, as they say?
He did. He really felt it was his duty to go after Pearl Harbor happened. And it, you know, it totally changed his life.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very poor growing up. They were a sharecropping family. So they didn't have any money. They moved around a lot from kind of like rental house to rental houses. They went to one job for another. And so, you know, I think that happened. And then he was like, you know, I can do this to help both my country and my family, because there were a lot of kids in his family. You know, he was the seventh child and he was not the youngest.
What an amazing American story he is, too, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. He went on to be, he was an actor, mm-hmm. and I think even was a songwriter, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there's
a story, and a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, he's a songwriter.
And, you know, it's just, he came from such humble beginnings, and, you know, war is a horrible thing, and how some young teenager, basically, you know, came out of the war like that and just, was just totally different. It's just a great American story. And it's mm-hmm. one of the many great stories along the Jefferson Highway. You know, when I started discovering this, as you know, several years ago, one of the things I looked at is the different genres of interest. You know, you've talked about some of them today, Lisa, with the, you know, we talked about the Western history with the outlaws and the Jesse James history and all the things that, I mean, just amazing how it just ties to the route. But the military is really fascinating to me. We think a lot of our military history didn't probably happen in the middle of the country, but where else, what other route can you go on that has the World War I Museum and the World War II Museum on it?
Yeah, I mean, New Orleans has some incredible.
Kansas City World War I Museum was incredible. And then you have, you can see things like this. You can see all the Civil War history. Mm-hmm. John Brown, it's a lot of the war, early Civil War was involved, some of his efforts in Kansas and leading Kansas. And It just goes on and on. You can do something on the military history almost the entire route.
And there's the fort in Minneapolis, the fort we were talking about at the beginning.
The fort in Minneapolis, you're talking about in Alexandria, where the Louisiana maneuvers were in World War II, and a lot of the great decisions of D-Day were made right there. It's fascinating to me why. How much military history, Fort Scott, Kansas, just mm-hmm. a lot to discover when you travel around. Murphy is one that really fascinates me.
Fort Smith, we just drove through Fort Smith yesterday on our way to Edmond, Oklahoma. And
yeah, that's a little bit off our route, but obviously kind of connected. We want to go over there because they have a big deal happening with in the next few months with the United States Marshall Museum opening up in Fort Smith. So going to draw a lot of attention. So, but anyway, Mr. Murphy is just a fascinating character, in my opinion.
I know his name from my grandmother, who watched his films, and she thought he was the most handsome person on earth. She was a real groupie, and said, and whenever I stayed with her, it's like, okay, there's an Audie Murphy film. And some of them he wrote himself.
Yeah.
The one she, I remember, it's like To Hell and Back. That mm-hmm. was the big one that she just like, okay, it's time to watch this one. It's time to watch that one. And, so when you were talking about Audie Murphy today, I was like, oh, wait a minute. I know that guy. I know who he is. Yeah, and
wow,
you know, he really he was a songwriter as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, according to my grandmother, I don't know, that he was a really good dancer too.
Wow. Ooh.
I have no idea if that's
Audie Murphy on Dancing with the Stars. How long did he? I mean, what was his? Did he live for long, or like what happened?
No, unfortunately. He died in a plane crash in 71. Yeah, no plane crash.
Yeah. Oh
yeah.
Oh wow. Wow. Okay. So that's sad, you know, but then your community seems to still have more heroes too in surrounding the, you know, your whole area. Like, okay, yes. So I'm looking
for
at this.
A small county. We're not very big, you know. There's about 90,000 people in our county for a fairly small county. We've had a lot of interesting people come from here. I mean, if you've heard of General Claire Chennault, he was born over in Commerce. He was in charge of the
Flying Tigers.
Flying Tigers, yeah. In the China India Burma Theater. We've had two of the Doolittle Raiders from this area.
Wow.
So, yeah.
We need to come see you, because I think these exhibits are so important to understand. But you also have people in the World War One. So you're covering World War One and World War Two, mm-hmm. right? Wow.
Yeah. We actually go from Civil War all the way through Vietnam, although, of course, the largest exhibit is on World War Two.
Wow. So Civil War Two. So it was. Yeah, mm-hmm. because, you know, the Civil War, that's really interesting when you think about it, because, you know, it coming out West. A lot of people always think Civil War is back. No, it did come out West. And that's why mm-hmm. I find Missouri so interesting, because that things
kind of got. Well, I think that goes back to, you know, Hunting Springs and Adam. I mean, yes. A lot of people don't have any, you know, a lot of people with limited knowledge of the Civil War history, they did not understand the battles in the diverse battles that occurred in the Indian Territory and other areas nearby in Arkansas. And there's a fascinating stories involved in them, and they were very influential. In fact, the last Confederate general to surrender was a part of the battle at Honey Springs, correct, Adam?
No, he was, his troops were here, but he was actually sent on a diversionary attack to Weber's Falls, Stan Waite. And I also forgot to mention, guys, we have a visitor center where we opened our permanent exhibits back in November, and we have a 3D theater that details the battle and its history, as well as the other exhibits that detail not only the battle itself, but the overall history of the Civil War in Indian Territory. And Roger, you brought up a really interesting topic as far as the different military engagements that took place along the Texas Road. You know, Cabin Creek was another one that took place along the Texas Road, just close to Pryor, and many of the same soldiers that fought at Cabin Creek would later, two weeks later,
which is also on the Jefferson Route.
Exactly. That's why. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So the stories and backgrounds of those that fought at Honey Springs, that's what really stands out. And in the diversity, as you mentioned, Roger, it's
you know,
absolutely
and you have, and I have not had the opportunity to go down there. It's been on the back of my mind, like several to go
busy
down there and see. You have award-winning video, from what I can tell.
And we have a documentary just produced. It's called The Battle of Honey Springs. And you know, it's about 30 minutes, and it details the history and really goes into detail on not only the tactics here, but the stories and the background of those who fought here. I mean, the Union soldiers, in particular, Major General James Blunt, the Union general here, mm-hmm. he had been an abolitionist. He fought in the Bleeding Kansas years with John Brown in Kansas. So,
wow,
all of these histories tie together. It's absolutely amazing.
It's like the crossroads of battle, you know,
right.
But then the Indians were also part of that, right?
They absolutely were, especially the five tribes who had been removed you know, in the early 1800s, they had made lives for themselves, you know, just got back on their feet, and there were divisions in particular between the Muscogee Creek Nation and the Cherokee Nation, dating back to the removal years where they sided with both the Union and the Confederacy. By the time they fought here at this conflict, they were fighting against their own tribal nations. So,
wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of history here.
Yeah, that's, and you have a reenactment. So how often do you do your big reenactment?
So we do the reenactment every other year, and this year it will be held on November 3rd, 4th, and 5th.
Oh, so everyone can plan.
We usually get several thousand people out for it. So be on the lookout. We have a Facebook page as well, Honey Springs Battlefield and Visitor Center, in addition to the website.
And you can you can walk, see the reenactment, but even it's just an experience to be out there and walk among the camp and see different the reenactors. And
that's right.
Yeah, how they do it. To me, it's just as important.
It makes history come alive, especially for kids.
It does.
For kids to understand, I think this is important too, because I know that, Civil War and reenactments, they've had some scrutiny too, and also going away, even mm-hmm. up in Gettysburg, they were at a point of losing enough people to actually be volunteers to do them, mm-hmm. Just a change of generation. And but there's been this scrutiny of, okay, well, is this a bunch of white guys, fighting each other? And I've been through some reenactments and film some actually too. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to hold your, I don't care if you have a tripod, and when those cannons go off, it's like, no, the thing when you go to a reenactment, it makes it so like understanding you, I don't care. Yeah. This is a reenactment, but my heart just.
You know, and one of the comments you made there, we have the time I was last there, they had the first Kansas colored reenactors.
But that's what I was going to get to. Yeah,
so, you have a very diverse group of reenactors.
We do, and we're working on that. In addition to the reenactment, I forgot to say as well, we have a memorial every year. This year is going to be July 15th, and it honors the 100. This year will be the 160th anniversary of the battle itself. So.
Oh wow, that's wild.
Yes.
And I think the other story here is, Adam has been a part of a renaissance of this, because, the site was purchased by a lot of it was people that wanted it to happen back in, I want to say, the early 1960s.
That's correct. Yep.
And, it is amazing the journey that this has been forgotten all this time, and they acquired land, did different things, the state been involved, but you could go down in my generation growing up nearby, you could go down there and see the battlefield, but there was not the hit being able to tell the story of it. There was no visitor center, and there was nothing like that. And so Adam's been part of the renaissance there, which has brought all that forward, and it has a state-of-the-art interactive stuff now there, and to tell the story, and that's a great accomplishment.
Thank you so much. We've got a long ways to go, but we'll get there. So
Adam, I wanted to go to the actual land itself, because of the name Honey Springs, because this is something I always kind of, I know Nancy and I get into, because we're always out in the wild
somewhere.
But it's because when you think about battles and you think of like the Louisiana maneuvers, right?
Right.
They take, here's a bunch of people, hey, we're going to go fight. We're going to do this. And next thing you know, you're going through the swamps of Louisiana, riding in tanks going, what did I just sign up for? Right.
You got
Fort Polk down there and everything. And it's like, even when when Susan was talking about Vietnam War, it's like, okay, all right, you may have been, living in Oklahoma, but now you're going to go to Vietnam. Have fun. It's like two different territories when you fight a battle. And it's that's what's, when you read battle strategies and how things happen, like the Battle of New Orleans to me is still one of the most fascinating battles that happened. And how the Indians did come to fight for New Orleans, you know, and how Andrew Jackson got involved, and then like just how everybody came in blew my mind about that. But it was, it came about knowing the territory and the land.
Yes.
So Honey Springs had to be fascinating about the territory with this.
It's absolutely right. The inhabitants of the tribal nations really wanted to remain neutral because they had been removed, you know, years earlier, and they were just starting to thrive. And approximately 100,000 inhabitants in Indian territory before the Civil War broke out. And they had to make a tough decision. The forts had been abandoned by the federal forces, where they diverted men, goods, supplies to the east. And that opened a vacuum for the Confederate government to sign alliances with the five tribes. And then, like I said earlier, there were splits that didn't want to fight for the Confederacy and ended up fighting for the Union. But really, the boils down to is they wanted to remain neutral, but they had to make a difficult decision on both sides there.
Wow. Wow. Do you have springs? Like,
we do. And it's in our monuments area, which is located roughly where the Confederate depot would have been located. So that's Trail 6 of the battlefield. That's actually the first stop on the battlefield road that you'll see the monuments area in the Honey Springs area.
So you talk about the Confederate depot. So that's another piece of history to touch on is Confederate flags, Confederate, like you go to Gettysburg, you can see that too. You go, I'm just using Gettysburg, you know, because we're talking about the Civil War, but that's something that has
how do you
interpret that are we in an interesting time of that to interpret that? And isn't that part of the importance of going
within the historical context, you know, we do have memorials to all those that fought here on both sides, but historically want to tell the story historically accurately, you know, accurately. So, and we include the stories of both sides that fought here. So,
I think it's a very tender thing right now, but there's also, like, I remember going to Little Rock at the State Museum, and they have a memorial section for some of the soldiers in the Civil War, but they were honored because they really stood up for their land, because it's not always it's also about family and land and their territory. Okay. Yes. So it's not, Civil War is a little different than what we all just, you know, you can't make, it's not black and white.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead.
Yeah. You've got to look like Stonewall Jackson and people may not like Andrew Jackson, how he helped New Orleans, right? Like people don't like Andrew Jackson, but he did it, man. And so like, it's a very complex thing when we get into these stories of battles and sides, but when somebody has done a really good battle and really, you know, strategically made things happen and led their men, I mean, you've got, whether you like them or not, you've got to also kind of honor that they fought for something they believed
in and both sides, they've absolutely fought for what they believed in here at Honey Springs. So like I said, it's complex, but it's really fascinating if you can,
you know, read more about it. Both of these locations are ones that people probably don't you know, unless you're into this history, you don't necessarily seek out all the time. But you know, just like on Honey Springs, the Jefferson Highway route that will be marked in Oklahoma later this year, the turn that you really need to go to get to where they are is right, you know, is right on the route, you know. Otherwise, if you're on the main highway, it's kind of hard to even find you, Adam.
It is, and
it's a challenge. Because there's no exit there, you have to go back basically on the highway route.
Right.
And we this is why we want to work together with this, is we create these tourism links, we create these things, because this is a place I think that being in Oklahoma, and I know that every Oklahoman I think ought to spend an afternoon and see the battlefield there. I I can't imagine them not enjoying it. And it's just, it's part of the heritage that you seek out. And it's the same way with, you know, Greenville. I haven't yet been there, but, you know, there's probably, you know, if I asked my son who Audie Murphy was, he would know. But if I, you know, if I told him his history and explained it, I know he would be fascinated.
Yeah, like I remember the story now when Susan came on, I was like, oh yeah, I get it now. And I know that story, you know, that past. But Susan, do you get a lot of people coming in because of him, like knowing the story and wanting to be who, you know, just going to honor him, maybe not even be connected to the town?
We do. And what's interesting, too, is kind of partly depending upon their age. Some of them know him more from the military aspect, while others knew him more from the acting aspect.
Oh, wow.
And then we also have some, a lot of people also don't realize that there's still to this day a Sergeant Audie Murphy Club in the Army.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, yeah, huh. Most cool. soldiers know who he was, or they learn who he was early on. And that is something that is very unique and extremely difficult to get into. It's something that you can't, another soldier has to nominate you to even be able to try. And it's not for officers at all. So it's, yeah.
Well, so many actors have played in films, war films, that you just go, anybody in a film about a war is going to be an actor. And here's somebody who comes along. He's an actor, he's a singer.
And he did it.
And he actually was in the military, and he actually did see combat. So it's kind of, he's very different than what you would normally expect to see.
Mm. Right. And he was also very little. People don't realize, especially in the movies, you know, they kind of hide that. They had to do something because he was not always taller than the female actresses. He was only 5'5" when he enlisted. So very little.
Tiny guy.
He actually grew a tiny little bit while he was overseas, which was unusual.
One of the things I did a year or so ago, I was doing a series on our Facebook page of all the statues on the route. And you have a beautiful statue out front, is that correct?
Yeah, memorial for Audie Murphy. Yeah. A local sculptor did that, and he did an amazing job.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, and speaking of that, you know, our little jaunt that we did, you know, Roger, you know, I'm like, here, Roger, we're here. He goes, go here. Right. I'm like, we can't, we're going off in this, because there's different parts of, like, you can't just drive straight through. There's like once you get on the, like I said, once the bug bites, it's a happy joy thing to experience. But like, we're on this side, that side. But we went to Leon, and I photographed the Freedom Rock that was done, and that is a memorial there. So, you know, they have D. Daryl Johnston that was painted on this memorial rock, and so it's like, okay, you go there. And now I'm going to have to look him up. happen, you know, you go and you see these things, and it's at the courthouse right near where the Jefferson Highway sign is, the interpretive sign, explaining some of the history. But that's the thing, when you go down the highway, go into these small communities and you will find a memorial. And I think courthouses are a good place, wouldn't you say, Roger, to go find some of the, you know, the war memorials. For people,
there definitely is, and there's like I said before, you will, every time I'm about ready to start, as I go back up into Iowa here, and I'll be going through the Kansas route on the way to Iowa, I know I will discover things that I had no idea existed, because that's what it is. It's an Americana experience, and you're always finding new stories and new things that really bring the route alive as we move forward. We're certainly not, you know, known like Route 66 or even the Lincoln Highway, but the culture on the route, being a north-south route, is really fascinating. And when you travel it, you know, from Louisiana all the way to Minnesota, there's just so many different elements to see. And the military history, yeah, of, as we're talking about today, is just one part of that.
You know, that's the thing. Yeah, when you think about also the Midwest, and you were talking about, you know, there's the Dust Bowl and things that did happen, right? And people did migrate out of the area, and a lot of them became military heroes. And so I think that's the other thing to look at is, you know, some of the heartlands, like people moved out of areas, and I wonder if that comes back to the communities, you know, of people who went out of the region. I know it's not all there, but history did change, didn't it? You know, for part of the Midwest, and people did move, and then they did fight and did serve.
Yeah.
So I wonder about people coming home to their roots, you know, after going to war.
I think it's hard when military come back, if they've seen combat, it's not the easiest thing, because it's like, how much do I tell? Mm-hmm. You don't want to make your family feel bad. I know when we lived in 29 Palms, there are a lot of military around, and you could see that it's not an easy thing to go to combat and come back, especially in wars that were unpopular, like Vietnam was an unpopular war. And so when you look at different periods of history, you know, it's like you go to serve your country and then you come home, and Vietnam wasn't popular, so people are mad at you, you know. And it's so it takes a lot, you know. And I think for some people, like somebody like Audie Murphy, who's extremely creative, I think it's and smaller in stature, I think it's even harder.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and
go ahead.
I was just going to say, what amazes me probably the most about him is the fact that he did do the movie To Hell and Back, which was based on his life. Basically relive your experiences. I kind of wonder if it might have been kind of, you know, maybe a form of therapy for him.
Just to get it all out and say what it was really like.
But
yeah,
also,
that's got to be really interesting to be in a movie that's really about your life. I mean, that's pretty unique.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wait, how many people get to do that? Or
not very many. There's hardly any. You talk a little bit. You know, think about, you're talking about the ones that came back. You know, you talk about the ones that, you know, Adam is how much, you know, being on the soil that they were fighting for in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And as Adam was saying earlier, you know, the tribes were, you know, they were being moved here.
Yes.
But they had established governments. They were starting to be okay. And then all of a sudden this war broke out, and they were caught in. And it devastated a lot of the things that they had built, and it took quite a bit of time. Then the railroad came in the 1870s, but it was a major upheaval of people, and not only only the people that fought in the battle, but the whole nations.
And there were huge population decreases as a result. Right. In particular, you know, Muscogee Creek Nation, I believe they lost 24% of their population.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot. You know, and the Cherokee Nation's close to it. But, you know, homes were burned and people lost their loved ones.
And I think a lot of folks don't really realize what these tribes, I mean, I think they think of the native tribes that they were out here, maybe in teepees and.
Right.
No, that was not the case. Mm-hmm. The they were very, a lot of them were very cultured, had fine homes, and a lot of them were burned, of course, and destroyed during these time periods.
Yeah, and Honey Springs was a Muskogee Creek settlement. I mean, it, they had buildings, the toll bridge, which you can see the original remnants of on the battlefield on Trail 4, too.
And you think about that as a, it's kind of traumatic. Not kind of, it is, because, you know, these kind of things are traumatized. Like, they go through your DNA, you know, your family history. And to think, you know, they got removed, they got displaced, you know, hair cut off. We all know the horrors. And if you don't, go look it up. Seriously. And it's just, you know, now we're going to go do this. It's like the Navajo Code Talkers too, you know, you know what they did. And so that's, I just kind of feel like, you know, they've done so much, and yet then here you've got the tribes actually fighting each other. That's so.
Well, and then within another few decades, you know, their land was basically split up in allotments.
The Reconstruction Treaties of 1866.
Oh, wow.
You know, that was huge. It didn't matter which side they fought for. They were basically, you know, treated the same way.
I wanted to ask this. I know this is just off the wall kind of question, but, you know, when we think about, we do so many military history programs, and there's, you know, you serve in the military, and then, you know, there's programs to help once you leave service, right? Whether it's education, all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But when it was like the Civil War, I don't think we had any of that kind of stuff, right? We didn't have any kind of anything to really help those who fought, did we? And if they were African-American and if they were Native American, would they have gotten the same help at that
time?
There
was a sanitation commission, helped some soldiers, more so probably in the East, you know.
Right.
But even for a large number of people here, it didn't, there was not a lot of help. They had to go to other places. They were dispersed to all the way from to North Texas after this conflict here to Kansas, to be honest with you.
Kansas, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, people, they eventually did come back, and a lot of them came back to, you know, overgrown fields. They lost their livestock and everything that they had worked for ever since they had been removed here. So
And yet they fought in the war.
And so, and some argue this was almost as devastating on the tribal populations as the Trail of Tears.
I think it's something that's not really thought a lot about, but it was. And then there was you know, we wonder today why we hear a lot about the Trail of Tears, but this time period was really devastating, and it took quite a bit to come back from it.
And it shaped how it would later be formed as a state, good or bad.
Right.
And that's a thing. It's like we have to keep that history alive, right? So people understand and interpret and ingest it. I think going to museums, you know, and there's something that, like where you're talking about your visitor center too at Honey Springs, but also with Susan, you know, of the Cotton Museum, everyone, cottonmuseum.com, got to plug it. Go in, when you go to these museums, you're looking at people's personal artifacts, whether it's their uniform, their shoes, their gun, maybe a diary. When you experience that, and you're talking even your county history, which I think is so fantastic because, you know, like I always go into family history and genealogy. Oh, Roger, another show on that. Hey, just saying. And movie, we could do movie history on the route. I'm just saying, Roger, rabbit hole. We can get Susan back on. When you know, you go into a museum like that, do you see that? Because I saw on your site that you do a lot with, you know, children's programs. When they start to see, like, how little we were as human beings, right? Number one, back in the day. And then seeing cotton and understanding how they're, the civilization, you know, it's really, you know, museums showcase how the history of human beings, how we started farming and, oh, now we're going to be civilized. And yet we're going to, you know, go kill each other in wars. You know, it's kind of a interesting thing. So when you take kids around, do they kind of get that understanding, that somberness? Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. And they ask a lot of questions, especially we have in the museum a little outfit that a 4-year-old boy wore when he was traveling by wagon. I get a lot of them to ask about that outfit, and I tell them what happened. The little boy unfortunately got sick on the journey and didn't make it, but his family kept that outfit their entire life and then passed it down to their descendants until it came to us. And it's like, they're like, wow, okay, so somebody that was like, you know, just like us, you know, but unfortunately didn't survive the journey. They kind of start to relate then.
Wow. You it's know like the little drummer boys and the little pipers that go out in the battle. That just freaks me out that these kids are out there playing music while they're blowing cannons and killing each other in a marching line. It just, it's still just, it like.
I wonder if he had to get parental consent to go out there and do that.
For Civil War demonstrations?
No, I mean.
No, for real, like.
For real,
the kids.
Little drummer boys that were like, they, you know,
I think they're going to be orphans most of the time. Yeah. Maybe,
yeah. It's like who let that happen?
Adam, you have a lot of school groups and stuff like that.
We do, and we're getting more now that we're fully open. So we tell the story of the diversity here, obviously the battle and the tactics. I mean, there's so many different elements to it, military history, social history, economic history, you know, down the line. And we try to do the best we can to relate that to the students, and they all really enjoy coming out here. And the visitors enjoy the new visitor center as well. So,
That's great about the visitor center. Being out in the battlefield area, do you feel that too, just even going to work there? Going to battlefields gives me the I don't want to say heebie-jeebies, but it makes things very, very real very quickly.
It does make it real. It feels like, I know this is a word that's used a lot, but it really is hallowed ground. People fought there for what they believed in, and we do the absolute best we can to honor those individuals who fought here. And approximately 200 people gave their lives here, and about 140 Confederate soldiers, I forgot to mention this who passed away here, were buried in one or more graves on the battlefield, and they're still out there.
We don't know where that is, correct, Adam?
We don't know where that is, no. There have been studies conducted in the past. We don't know for 100% sure yet, but when we do, we'll definitely mark that area and honor those soldiers.
Well, talk about some deep history, peoples. Roger, you always point us in the right direction and get good people on our show. So, you know, the highway provides, man. You've got to go. This is the thing. Go out there.
You know, when we started while back, you made a comment, we're never going to run out of stories, and I don't think
that's
right.
And then going
out
on
there,
it.
I mean, I've got about 6 to 10 shows of mine right now.
I know
it's fascinating, you know, when this music came up.
What's fascinating to me, you know, was, you know, we've done parts of the highway, in Texas. Done Gladewater, but I didn't know about the highway then, you know. Oh, I knew, but I didn't know, I didn't get the route 100%, like I do now. And listen, if you go on the website, jeffersonhighway.org, and you click on that map and you put it on your phone, I'm telling you, it helps you so much get out there and do things and see 8-sided barns and like all this stuff. This is Americana. And we are losing our Americana. Like I was talking about our friends with the neon signs, and they're like, these signs in one day, they lost 3 signs, not them. We lost them in our country going into people's private collections. And it's become things that are novelties in people's bars. And yet the people that sell them actually need the money because they're in really tiny towns that need the money. And so we have this going on in our country with Americana going away. And that's why museums and battlefields, like we're talking about today, these places are so important, and to keep it alive. And the highway, the value of the highway is beyond anything that I think any of us could ever calculate when it comes down to people actually getting on the highway, exploring.
It's kind of a time memories. Portal.
Yeah, it is.
We think of the Jefferson Highway as a time period. You said 1915, so you think of it during a time period was there. It was, but a lot of our travelers that were traveling the highway, even in the 20s, were stopping at some of these historic sites and places along the route. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing today. There's Americana around every turn. And we are losing it. And both of these sites would not have happened if they weren't wasn't for people that saw the value to preserve it. Mm-hmm. I know Honey Springs is a great example of that because, you know, there was tons of efforts in acquiring this land for this. And there was people that dreamed. I mean, one of my early history teachers in middle school was highly involved in Honey Springs research way back. I got fascinated in it from him, but, you know, it's just, these people saw that and they worked and they did a lot of the efforts and the same thing I'm sure happened in the Murphy Museum with people collecting his artifacts and doing the things that to honor these folks. And it doesn't take, you know, if people just take the time to visit them, they will really enjoy it.
Exactly. And, to all those preserving history, we give a big shout out, Susan. Your community obviously stepped up to make sure this museum happened to document this history.
Yeah, they did. And they did.
I think it's awesome. I want to say this about small towns. There's no town too small to save your history. People come home. People want to, generations down the road, want to know who their ancestors were, and they want to step foot there, whether it's a battlefield. That's a somber thing to do, but it means that connection is so huge when you do. And whether it's a museum that actually has a history that you're trying to understand, it's such a huge thing. And so preserving these you know, artifacts, historic photos, people do this. They throw historic photos away. I don't know who these people are, just toss them. Don't do it. There's so much to learn from the past, and the highway is that. And at the same time, you can get some really darn good food. You can have some scenic drives, see awesome public art. I mean, there's all kinds of nature experiences to have on the highway too. Sure. So there's so much. So everyone, jeffersonhighway.org is the website. The conference is coming up. So Roger, what happens if someone wants to join the caravan or the conference last minute, or just go to pop into an event? Like what
the
happens
best step
now?
Is probably just to email us immediately as soon as you can at info@jeffersonhighway.org. I don't know, by the time this broadcast happens, hopefully our website will be up, where our provider's got some problems right now. We're trying to get that. So you can't. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you could go there and get some information. If you want to know more about the caravan, go onto YouTube and just search Jefferson Highway Sociability Caravan. And there's a video that will come up that will give you some insight into what we're doing. We're going 3 days through Iowa together, stopping at places. Communities are embracing us and hosting everything from ice cream socials to all kind of different events.
I want some ice cream.
We've even got a few surprises in store that I'm not divulging yet in a couple of communities. And we're doing a passport where we have stamps. These communities are coming up with their own stamps. And we're going to, so everybody that has their whole stamp is going to get a special prize at the end. We're having a photography contest. It's just going to be a lot of fun. And you don't have to do the whole route. If you're in there in Iowa or Missouri, whatever, you just want to come out for a portion of a day, we'd love to have you. But just send us an email to info@jeffersonhighway.org. We'll send you all the information and get you registered. There is no really cost to it. other than just taking care of your own expenses. We do have some souvenirs and stuff that are available also for purchase.
So. Right on. Cool. So everyone, jeffersonhighway.org, but and yeah, the server issues do kind of take 48 to 72 hours. This airs this Sunday, so they also have a fabulous Facebook group, the Jefferson Highway Facebook page, and then the Jefferson Highway discussion group, which is super cool. You're always checking out something cool there. Adam, I want to ask you before you go.
Sure.
Have you asked Carrie Underwood to write a song about Honey Springs? I think she should.
Wow, that's a great idea. Next time I see her, I'll do that, which I've never met her before, but that would be awesome. But
I'm just saying, I mean, that's her backyard of history.
That's right.
And I think she should write a song and sing one or get someone to write it on Honey Springs. That's a good song. I'm just bringing that music back in. But everyone, again, thank you, Adam, Lynn. Again, Honey Springs Battlefield and Visitor Center. You can find them on Facebook, too, or go to okhistory.org/sites/Honey Springs. Just type in Honey Springs Battlefield. But I will have the link in the show notes. Everything we're talking about, the links will be in the show notes, no matter whether you're listening on Facebook or YouTube or Apple or Google or wherever you're listening. It will be linked in from there. So thank you, Adam. And
thank you.
Susan, thank you for joining us. I'm so glad we connected and that you could come on the show today. Cottonmuseum.com is the website. And we hope to see you too and come out to the museum and visit Greenville, Texas. Yeah.
Definitely.
You've already got your music, apparently, you know, Audie decided to write for you. So, you know, but do you have good food?
We do. Yeah, we do.
Okay. Well, just making sure.
We have music here, too. Across the street from our visitor center is Oklahoma Blues Hall of Fame. And they're having their annual induction gala this Saturday at 2:30. So.
What?
Yeah. Yes.
So you have a Blues Hall of Fame?
Well,
and I don't know about it? Oh, my gosh.
We're located in Rennesville, actually. I mean, we have a Shakota address, but we're closer to Rennesville. And it's one of 13 all African-American towns remaining in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. What? Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
My gosh. No, I want to go. I want to go. Like, I'm a blues singer and writer and all that. I'm a blues musician. I want to go.
It really is. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh, you I have no idea.
You might like one of the Mercy Me bandmates is from Greenville.
Really?
And also Colin Ray, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so, all right. So, Roger, cue up another music show. Let's go. Let's go.
We did one, but it was on jazz.
Yeah, well, listen, I've got people all up and down the highway of all genres of music, from blues to
rock,
Dixieland jazz to heavy metal.
You can
have heavy metal on the highway. That's the
no,
music
boy.
Of the, you know. Listen, when you're on the highway, sometimes you need it, you know.
Yes.
I'm just saying, I drive, and once in a while you have to wake up, but but anyway, I don't I didn't play heavy metal when we did the Jefferson Highway because you were stopping. I wanted to stop every 5 feet, you know, like, look, there's this and there's historic signs. And when you get to Texas, you're in big trouble because Texas is the state of historic signs. I think your state
That's
wins
correct.
Of every historical marker. Just stop
that
every 5 minutes.
Correct.
Stop, stop, stop. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's legal, I don't know. But you must stop at it, even if it's illegal, because that's a historical marker. And it's awesome. I do want to give a big thank you to Natchitoches Convention and Visitor Bureau, who is on the Jefferson Highway. They have a new Jefferson Highway sign, right, Roger, in Natchitoches, Louisiana, for the tourist camp. That's a new thing. And they have a Jefferson Highway Park. Go
on
ahead.
The campus of Northwestern State University. Yes.
Yep. They're not far from Alexandria, which we'll be talking about later on some other shows. That we were talking about Louisiana maneuvers that happen in Kissatchee Forest, not so far from Natchitoches, Louisiana. And their folk festival, speaking of music, is coming up in July, and you're going to want to go to that. It's one of the best events on the planet. So Natchitoches is Natchitoches.com is the website to go to. It's the oldest settlement in the state of Louisiana. And you can go to Natchitoches.com. See, getting a little Mickey Mouse kind of song there. But Natchitoches is a place you want to go to, and you've got to eat a meat pie when you're there. You've got to go to the Jefferson Highway Park, and you've got to enjoy Cane River Lake and all their historic sites, and go to the cemetery. Don't you think, Nancy? Everyone has to go to the cemetery. If you go to Natchitoches, go to the cemetery. It's very cool.
It is.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, guests, for joining us. It's been a true pleasure. And keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.